You're listening to the Electric Sheep Magazine podcast. I'm Alex Fitch, and in this month's episode, I'm talking to James Rowley Ashwood, Chief Operating Officer of Indie Movies Online, a website that allows you to download for free, due to its integration of adverts, a wide selection of world cinema and English language indie films. Indie Movies Online is also currently the online distributor of the controversial thriller, A Serbian Film, hosting the movie on the website since the day of its British cinema release, and allows you to watch it via your internet connection for only a couple of pounds. I'm talking to James about the history of the website, how he picked up A Serbian Film for online distribution, and the eclectic programming of the site, which includes some cult gems that are currently unavailable on DVD in the UK. At the moment, we see all sorts of adverts for broadband and computer technology saying, use this to download full-length movies from the internet. And I think the majority of people only know the way that you download movies from the internet is to do so illegally. And so it seems very strange that in a way, technology companies are encouraging people to engage in an illegal activity. But I guess that's because there's a lack of knowledge that there are sites like yours out there. Was this something that you'd considered when you first founded Indie Movies Online, or was it purely the fact that 3 years ago there were very few sites at all that you could get movies from on the internet?
Well, I think that highlights just how many people on the periphery are making money from piracy at the moment. And that's there's a lot of big-name companies that are making some money. Yeah, in this country, in the UK, there are, you know, literally a handful of sites that are offering full free movies. On Indie Movies, we stream everything, so there's no downloading. There are a couple of others. Lovebox do a streaming service, as do our rivals over at Blinkbox. Apart from that, there's not really anything else. Yeah, the majority of them. Mm. And you can find this out by going on Google and typing in free films or free movies. You'll see them all stack up. Yeah, I mean, when we kicked off 3 years ago, you know, piracy, there was some big players in there. Those big players are still there, and due to massive inaction on behalf of the industry and legislation, you know, it's created these opportunities for new ones to spring up. You know, and I think with online piracy, it's you know, ad revenues become the new cash, and you know, streaming through a player has become the new pub car park. That's where it's all taking place. Will it be tackled by the Digital Economy Act? I don't think so.
And when you started the company, did you need startup money to do so? And if so, was it hard to convince banks and investors that, in fact, you know, you were at the forefront of a new way of distributing films?
Yeah, well, there's obviously we needed to start up with some capital. You know, playing ball in the film world is expensive.
Yeah.
To give an example, if you want to work with studios, that's just to get the rights to sell those. Mm. You know, you've got to be looking at putting a few million down on the table, otherwise you just don't get you don't get a chance. I mean, on one hand, it is a paradigm shift in how content's being delivered, and when the web and TV merges once and for all, the landscape will be indistinguishable. As for, you know, as for how much it costs to do so, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's an expensive game to be in.
When it came to finding the initial lineup of films that you had on the site when you launched, did you find that there were actually a fair number of film companies out there who were open to what you were doing, or was it actually a struggle from day one?
Yeah, actually, I mean, okay, so, I mean, we have a rights team whose specialism is to secure content. I say we have about 500 films in the UK, so it's a long process. We're working with 35 different distributors, including people like Lionsgate, you know, and specialist art house distributors like Soda Pictures. We even have an agreement with ITV, where you can watch My Left Foot on Indie Movies now for free. In terms of how we chose it, okay, so the reality is we want to be a global site. So we're operational in the UK, US, Canada and Australia. Now with independent films, there might be a separate rights holder in each of those categories. So it only tends to be the very big films, or indeed the very, very small films, that tend to have one rights owner across the world. So we have films in the US that we don't have rights for in the UK,
right,
which is frustrating. But sadly, those companies have nothing to do with each other who are holding the rights either side of the Atlantic, so there's nothing much we can do. In terms of our policy for picking films, yeah, absolutely. We're looking, I mean, for a start, we are, with Indie Movies, we are a little bit limited by our rights category, if you like, because it's free to view.
Sure.
So that means we're not going to get you know, totally brand new films free to view because they need to go on their transactional things like, you know, Sky and stuff first. Having said that, you know, we do really well with some foreign films that we pick up for the site that just have struggled to find an English distributor. There's still that same old nonsense that people don't like to read and watch at the same time. So that leaves an opportunity to bring more cultured aspects. In terms of more popular stuff, yeah, we're going to go back and have to look at a few classics like King of New York to get a more popular kind of feel.
I mean, we were talking about the way that you've curated the website up to a point in a way that's less of a computer algorithm like you might get Amazon suggesting things you like, which is almost inevitably wrong whenever I use it. And that seems to be that you're also trying to fill the niche of the local video shop, which is something that has disappeared from almost every high street around the country anymore. And obviously there are still, you know, big chains like Blockbuster, but there certainly were a fair number of decent video shops where customers would develop a relationship with the people behind the counter who would know their tastes and be able to recommend things based on them having a fairly decent collection. And I guess that's something you're aiming for as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, conceptually, we're trying to make the biggest online independent film shop in people's living rooms. Mm. I mean, that's the beauty of what we're planning going forward. I mean, once we are, like I say, once this web and TV world mesh, then yeah, I mean, the idea is that anyone can be sitting down, flicking on their TV, going to the Indie Movies channel on whatever box it's delivered, yeah, and saying hello to pretty much every independent film that's worth watching. That's the goal. How long it will take to get there? Could be months. You know, could be months. Probably a year.
I mean, on a personal basis, were there films that you'd wanted to see in this country and were actually, in a way, you found them, the audience that they never had in the first place? Because flicking through your site earlier, I noticed, for example, there's a film by Lars von Trier and Thomas Vinterberg called D-Day that I heard about 10 years ago and thought, why has this never come out in the country? And actually I was surprised, oh, it's on your website, brilliant.
You know? Yeah, well, I'm glad you liked it. Funnily enough, that was the first time that the rights owner, Trust Nordic, is going to ever license these films to anyone in the world. So I'd like to think that's something to do with the fact that we're providing a very kind of caring and curated environment for it. But yeah, I mean, that you know, I hope that people will go through the site and spend a bit of time discovering, you know, discovering films. I mean, there was one when we very first started. There was one that that I picked. It was Peter Greenaway's film essay, Rembrandt's Jacuzzi, considered difficult to release in the traditional sense, but I absolutely loved it. You know, that was a worthwhile hour and a half. You know, my goal was always to sort of get a good mix of films across the board, so we've got, you know, some genre, some horror, some comedy, but also some more intellectual, thought-provoking essay pieces and documentaries. So, you know, I'm glad that you picked out that one particular film. I mean, the site's full of stuff like that. You know, there's, we get, you know, bizarrely we get lovely emails from people thanking us for putting films on that, you know, like you said, you'd heard of and then forgotten, then went back to enjoy again.
Yeah.
So that's great, you know. And we've got an editorial team of four people whose job it is to sift through and find the films and scout them. You know, occasionally we do have a hit list, and we actually occasionally realise some of the films that we want to get. And we've got a lovely one coming out when the site redesigns in 2 weeks, which I hope everyone will come back to and watch, which was the Oscar-nominated film Departures, which is a fantastic piece.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up Rembrandt's Jacuzzi by Greenaway, because it, with a film like that, there's obviously the crossover potential that if people go to see Night Watching in the cinema, they might then go to your site to see the documentary that complements it. And at the same time, for example, there's a new film by Jerzy Skolimowski in the cinema, and you're showing one of his most famous earlier films, The Shout. So hopefully it means that, you know, there's cross-pollination of ways of sourcing these films.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of, you know, we have, like I said, we have an editorial team, and we do, you know, report on the day's news. You know, and the lovely thing is we can anchor back what we're reporting on the day with what we've got in the library for people to watch. And yeah, it's fantastic when it's an early piece of work from a director that someone's, you know, getting all interested in today, or some talent that's that makes an appearance.
I mean, like you mentioned that you were showing a film that ITV have the rights to, and actually there's also a fair number of films on your site that I would associate with the BFI. So how do you work with these companies and not make it feel like you're treading on their toes?
Okay, well, I can answer that one easily. The BFI, yeah, it will look a little bit like it, because I think we licensed 65 from them in total. And there's, you know, some fantastic pieces on there, but they are, you know, they are very specialist. Mm. You know, just same with the Peter Greenaway film. It's very specialist. It's only going to appeal to, you know, a smaller number of visitors, which is fantastic because those smaller number it entertains immensely. For someone like ITV, I mean, we're not a rival. We are another channel that they can license their films to, basically. So they don't see any conflict with what we're doing.
Well, I suppose that the BFI titles that stood out to me were you've got the work of the early work of filmmakers by like Stephen Frears and Shane Meadows and Ridley Scott on there. So again, I mean, if someone is a film of their later work and types in the name of the director into a search engine, it may send them to your site and they may watch one of the short films and then realise actually there's a greater library of stuff that you have as well.
That's always the goal. Yeah. I mean, we try and do that with everything. We try and leverage people in on one particular, and while they're there, hey, come and enjoy any of the other 500 films that we've got. I mean, that's why we picked those particular films for the BFI, because we wanted to get some of the director's early work in there. Yeah. Obviously, it's impossible to license some of their later work. But actually, I mean, the Shane Meadows, Where's the Money, Ronnie? Yeah. It's actually very good. Actually very good.
The UK Film Council has famously imploded over the last few months, and one of the remits of the Film Council seemed to be bringing British audiences to films that they may be unfamiliar with, to bring world cinema to a British audience. And so in a way you seem to be filling some of the remit that may have been lost by their closure.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind fulfilling some of the budget that they, well, they went down with. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when the UK Film Council officially collapsed, I think opinion was split between those who were disgraced that we would see such a, you know, key component of the arts landscape just taken away like that. And then, you know, actual filmmakers, the majority of people trying to break through, is just like, well, that means Mike Lee isn't going to get his next film part financed. I mean, my own view is I think the UK Film Council performs a very important role. Was it as wide as it should have been? Probably not. Like you say, I mean, bringing more, you know, more cinema to the British audience, and indeed taking British films and delivering them to the world audience, especially embracing new technology, you'd think that'd be a bit higher up the priority list. But, you know, what tends to happen is they stuck with what they were comfortable with, which meant that there were a handful of films that received over and above, and everyone else got the £5,000 for distribution.
Also, I guess you tap into trends in popularity of films in sort of like, you know, the greater media. Because I noticed you've got a very strong selection of Japanese films on there, for example. Sort of cult horror, like Vampire Girl versus Frankenstein Girl. Things that are considered Japanese cult classics, like Battle Royale, and even anime as well. So do you find that as the films from a certain country are reaching greater attention, you're kind of like tapping into the zeitgeist as well?
In some respects, but not necessarily related to that example.
Okay.
That example, you know, I was a massive fan of Battle Royale when it first came out, loved it when the opportunity was to have it on the site, fantastic. You know, things like Tokyo Gore Police, I mean, not something to eat, not something to watch on an empty stomach. But, you know, in that kind of genre of J-horror, you know, I was quite pleased. I think we probably got a strong lineup there. In terms of other emerging cinema coming out, I mean, there's quite an emerging sort of Indian film. I don't mean Bollywood, I mean like actual kind of horror and drama and stuff. The early batches that I've seen in and out of competition that I've had sent to me, not quite convinced they're ready for the Western audience, but they're there, they're moving along.
Yeah.
You know, it might only be a couple of 3 years away before that becomes, you know, just as important as, you know, Japanese horror films does within its genre. You know, equally, I have conversations with people who apparently there's an African horror scene that's emerging. who's to dismiss it? You know, if the creativity is there, it's worth pursuing. I mean, I think, you know, what I want to do with indie movies is to continue to get, you know, some good solid art house films, some good solid world cinema coming through. But then also, wherever possible, try and expand to, you know, previously kind of unseen, you know, world cinema and bring it in that way. Because, we're never sure if there's an audience for everything, but there's usually an audience for most things, you know, and that's the lovely thing about the interwebs. We should be able to bring people a bit closer to it.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that you've been going for nearly 3 years and you continue to increase your subscriptions, I guess means that the way that you're funding these films for free via adverts and so on is working.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm delighted to say the model does work.
Yeah.
We are receiving ad revenue against the views, which is paying the rights holder. Mm. You know, therefore, the end user, the internet browser, you know, is getting the films for free. You know, and the rights holder is actually getting paid something. So in my mind, that's a, you know, considering the state of the internet, I don't think we're doing too badly.
But I suppose it almost seems in a business model that loads of companies, if you said to them, we're going to show free movies, you know, would seem almost like insanity. They're like, but surely there must be some way you could incorporate micropayments into this. Yeah. But obviously people want things for free, but it's just convincing, you know, the revenue holders that actually you can make money by giving something away.
Yeah, I mean, it's, in one respect, it's not necessarily free because you have to watch some adverts. Sure. Same as watching ITV, same as watching free TV. The payoff is that, you know, someone has to monetize your time a little bit.
Yeah.
For most people, that's not an issue at all. Mm. I mean, we could go to, you know, we could do micropayments, but if we introduce micropayments, it still doesn't solve the problem that anyone can just go online and watch any film for free on a piracy site.
Sure.
You know, what we're trying to do is sort of, you know, what we're trying to do is respect what's actually going on. Not agree with it, but we've still got to respect it because it's there. You know, in the meantime, show a model which works for some film. But in terms of, you know, are any film studios going to release a brand new film onto ad-supported video on demand? No, of course they're not. But yeah, you know.
Even based on the model, perhaps they might watch it on your site, like it, and then go and buy the Blu-ray.
Well, you know, I look at a lot of research, and I'm involved in quite a bit myself, that shows, you know, and it's a really difficult one looking at, you know, people's piracy habits versus what they do legally, because there's no real way of correlating them, not meaningfully anyway. I mean, look at what goes on in the States. There's the joint venture between all the studios called Hulu. Mm. So that went on a free model. I mean, it, you know, according to analysts, it had $1 billion worth of programming. It had all the hit American TV shows, but it also had some films on.
Yeah.
That got up to a point where it was doing really well, and, you know, I guess led by the Fox consortium part of it, you know, now it's got to be behind a paywall, and now people have got to pay. So they'll see their audience just drop, you know, right down, because the reality is that the situation online hasn't changed. In fact, you know, there are more piracy options, you know, and it would be interesting if it wasn't decriminalised through inaction. Mm. But as I always say, you know, I don't think the fight should be with the end user. You know, I think the end user's going to go where, you know, big search engines or, you know, big looking sites tell them to. Mm. But what I think is important is just kind of, you know, when it comes to independent film, it doesn't operate on that same, scale as studio films. You know, I mean, we've just started, you know, to kind of rent films through the site, brand new films. Mm. You know, and for me, that's just giving an artist a fair chance to sell their work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that would be the same if it was, I mean, you know, that music industry, that's quite advanced, but if you, you know, design T-shirts, do anything, you deserve a fair chance to sell what you've made.
Definitely.
You know, and that's kind of what I'm trying to say to people, you know, through indie movies.
Yeah. Well, the most prominent film that you have on the site that you are charging for is a Serbian film. And I guess the controversy that has elicited so far from, I mean, just this week, apparently the people who programmed it at a Spanish film festival have been arrested for promoting child pornography or something.
Yeah, I think that's kind of bizarre. I think that's very bizarre. I mean, we got on board, you know, with Revolver, who are the UK rights owners. Because it all kicked off around Fright Fest when the film was basically pulled,
yeah.
And they wanted to see, I think, 49 cuts in 4 minutes, which the BBFC got in the end. You know, when we were looking at taking the film on, we were looking at taking the full uncut version, which I have to say I've seen, and it's grim.
Yes.
But you know, it's defensible because it's still a feature film. You know, it's not a fly on the wall documentary. But then at the last minute, the UK rights owner said, no, we're not putting out the uncut version. We're only putting out the cut version.
Would you have been allowed to? Could you show a film that doesn't have a BBFC certificate?
You can, you know, you can online at the moment. I mean, right. BBFC are looking to implement something online, and when they do, fantastic, send me over the email and we'll adopt it. I mean, at the moment, we just take conservative ratings for our films. If in, you know, if it's 15 or 18 and we're in doubt, we say it's 18. But that only happens when we're taking on, you know, mainly European or world films that haven't had any kind of British release, therefore they have no certification.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of, you know, going back to the Serbian film and people getting, you know, I've heard horror stories, pun intended, you know, people getting kicked out of their jobs and stuff for supporting this film, which I think is just nonsense.
Yeah.
Absolutely nonsense. I mean, you know, on one hand, you're talking about, I mean, take the case in Spain, for example, you're talking about, you know, prosecuting someone for showing child pornography. So does that mean all of the proprietors of all of the piracy sites are going to be hauled up for distributing it. It's, you know, it's so such an uneven view, and it just highlights, you know, the lack of understanding at a kind of ministerial level in any country about what, you know, piracy and online distribution are really about. Yeah. And if I may add one last thing, you know, I think the YouTube versus Viacom proved it a bit in the States. You know, I mean, I'm watching that with interest, because if Viacom don't win the second round, which they might not, I mean, effectively, that's then saying that whoever creates the copyright, whoever creates the material, now no longer has any say in where it distributes. Mm. Now, that's all right if you're one of the receiving people. If you're one of the making people, it doesn't leave you with any chance to ever recoup the money that you put into it. So therefore, stuff just won't get made as often.
Yeah, definitely.
And when we say hello to Bridget Jones 9 in 3D, there'll be no Serbian films, and there'll be much fewer indies on the market.
Mm. How successful have you found being the only way that a lot of people can watch a Serbian film? Has it actually brought an entirely new audience to your site?
Well, with the only way that people can watch a Serbian film online legally.
Yes, well,
and to those and to those many, many people who rent it through the site, I tip my hat to you, because you are supporting the filmmakers, you know, not from a moral point of view, but just from a general point of view. You know, you're saying, yes, I will pay to watch a film. Mm. So to that, I have to tip my hat, you know, because that's not an easy thing online. Has it brought in a new audience? No, I think the audience that we have is always going to be pretty clued up on the most kind of contemporary independent releases of the year. So I'm sure a Serbian film was on quite a few people's watch list.
Sure.
It was just nice that we were able to, in effect, we were the first platform in the world to release it commercially.
Yeah.
Which says three things. One, what a load of nonsense at the cinema. But secondly, great, because we're now being able to do that. You know, and thirdly, I think when it's possible to deliver these through a TV set, which is the next stage of our project, I think it's going to make it very easy for people to kick back at a weekend and, you know, watch some films a long time before they come through the regular channels.
Have you had any feedback from directors whose films you're showing to, A, I guess, a new audience, and B, a showing in the only venue in the UK if the DVD has been, say, long deleted? I mean, I'm thinking, for example, looking at some of the films you have on the site, you are hosting my favourite Alex Cox film, for example, Death and the Compass, and you're showing the Ian McEwan film, The Cement Garden, which, you know, both kind of like British cult classics that deserved a wider audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I say, with the UK Film Council, could they have done more? Well, if you'd listened to Alex Cox, they absolutely should have done more.
Yeah.
So I'm with him on that. I mean, to give you an example, the first director that I ever met while I was under the Indie Movies Online guys was the genre horror director Jake West.
Okay.
He had just finished Doghouse. Mm. This is a couple of 3 years back. And we have one of his films on the site called Evil Aliens, which is a bit of gory genre horror. It's good fun. You know, we were talking to him, we're like, you know, your film Evil Aliens has been doing fantastic on the site. You should have seen the look on his face as all of a sudden it just dropped, and he's like, "You're not one of these like torrent sites, are you?" And it's like, no, we've licensed it through these. Oh, fantastic. So in one respect, you know, for a lot of people, when they hear that their film's doing well on a site that's not a household name for them, they think it's a piracy site. So it was nice to be able to show that actually that's not the case.
Have you spoken to Alex Cox that you're showing some of his movies?
No, I haven't. But I mean, I hadn't seen Death and Compass until we, until we got it through his screeners. Actually, I really, really loved it.
Me too.
You know, it's fantastic. I mean, I think, you know, no, I haven't written to him. I haven't had a chin wag about the UK Film Council. Depending on how things go the next couple of months, I might.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope what we are doing, you know, and I hope that we can team up with, you know, other influential kind of players in the sort of emerging film area, you know, and I think if we can provide, you know, independent filmmakers in this country with a new way of, you know, reaching out to, you know, a more popular audience with their stuff, I think we would have succeeded in quite a few areas where the UK Film Council failed. And I joked earlier that I wouldn't mind some of their budget, but, you know, who knows, maybe we'll get that from the BFI.
Fingers crossed. And the films that you do host on your site, the deals that you make with the film companies, are they in perpetuity, or are you just given, say, 2-3 years before you have to take them down?
Yeah, the way it works is pretty standard. You know, you license for a period, a year, 2 years, and then you can renew if you want. I mean, in one respect, it's nice to have you know, the same film. I'll give Evil Aliens as an example. Yeah. Anyways, if you type it in on Google, bang, it's up there, you know, right at the top, so people know to come to us for that. But I think it's important to keep getting, you know, a selection of fresh stuff, because it's just streaming. I mean, no one gets to own a copy anyway, so I think, it's kind of an interesting question, actually. So another way of looking at it is, if all of your films are always available all the time, is there any impetus to just watch them? Because they'll always be there the following week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in some respects, refreshing the content... refreshing the films...
Yeah.
...is, not a bad way to go.
But you don't put countdowns, then, on, say, some of them saying, only available for one more month or whatever?
No, I mean, we probably could do. We might do. I mean... probably would be bad at it. I mean, I think what we will do when we've done the facelift of the site is... give our users a bit more, you know, create a few more ways for our users to know when things are coming on and when they're going off. You know, everyone gets emailed who leaves their address. But you're right, you know, when it's just a couple of weeks left, maybe people might want to catch it.
Thank you very much.
A pleasure.
For more info about Indie Movies Online, please go to www.indiemoviesonline.com, where you can search their catalogue by genre. And to find any of their films by name, including a Serbian film, type the name of the movie into the search bar. If you're listening to this in April 2011, can I take this opportunity to recommend the many events that are taking place in London as part of Sci-Fi London, the London International Science Fiction and Fantastic Film Festival, which takes place at various venues in central London, including the Apollo Piccadilly Cinema on Lower Regent Street and the BFI on the South Bank. And runs from Easter Saturday, the 23rd of April, until a Maybank holiday on the 2nd of May. The festival opens with a combined comic book and film event, as I'm interviewing some of the creators of the British horror comic John Constantine Hellblazer, including co-creator Jamie Delano, artist David Lloyd, best known for V for Vendetta, and writers Peter Milligan and Andy Diggle, the latter who also wrote last year's comic book adaptation The Losers, on stage. The panel is followed by a screening of the movie adaptation, and the festival continues over the next week and a half, including a variety of premieres and other panels, including a two-day comics festival at the British Film Institute on the last day in April and first day in May, where comic and various Electric Sheep magazine creators, including Matt Sherritt, Tom Humberston, Leo Connor and Hannah Berry, who'll be previewing her new graphic novel Adamtine, which follows her acclaimed debut Britain and Brew Lightly, will be talking about their work. Other unusual contributors to the comic medium will also be present, including blues singer V.V. Brown, and novelists China Mieville and Denise Mina. The festival closes on May the 2nd with a premiere of the new superhero film Super by James Gunn. For more info about all the above, please go to www.scifilondon.com, where tickets will be available to buy from the 5th of April, and for more information specifically about the comics events, please go to www.londoncomicsfestival.com. The Electric Sheep podcast was edited, recorded, and introduced by Alex Fitch, and there'll be a new episode online next month. Thanks for listening.